Live coast to coast on the BetMGM Network. That was a hell of a week one. I don't know how you improve over that. Maybe the best week one that any of us can remember. Us being RJ Choppy and John Martin alongside myself, Chris Mack. Welcome in to BetMGM. You don't forget to follow on all your social media at BetMGM Network. And of course, you can always watch the show on YouTube and Twitch as well. Search for the BetMGM Network on YouTube. You get all the information on the sidebar and along the bottom of the screen that you need to help you make bets for week two of the college football season. And we got at least a few games that we can dig into, although the slate not nearly as stacked as it was in week one when we had, I mean, every single day it felt like from Thursday night all the way through Monday night had something going on that was worth reacting to, if not overreacting to. So let's do that right out the box, boys. John, I'll start with you. What's your biggest overreaction from what you saw in week one?
Well, how about this? How about I point to an overreaction from somebody else rather than own? Because, you know, I think every reaction that I make is a justified reaction. You know, I just consider myself to be one of the most measured and even-keeled people on the planet. I would say dropping Texas to 7th by the AP poll voters is an overreaction. And quite frankly, ridiculous, stupid, and a disincentive for any team like Texas to play a game like that. Like, the if you're a voter and you drop Texas to 7th, like, I don't know, like, get your head out of your rear, man. And honestly, like, go back and watch the game and understand just how thin the margin was in that game. Understand that Ohio State lost every single possible category other than turnovers. If Carnell Tate doesn't make an absolutely absurd catch one-on-one coverage that was just basically a prayer from the Midwest there from Sand, that's a very different game. If Arch Manning isn't stopped on the one, it's a very different game. So I think dropping and punishing Texas, you know, 6 spots, I think is outrageous, especially considering they could have won the game.
Would you make the same argument then? Choppy, let me jump in. Would you make the same argument, John, for Clemson dropping 4 spots and Notre Dame dropping 3 spots too, considering how close those games were against quality opponents?
Yeah, well, think about it. I mean, first of all, Notre Dame was at home. Or excuse me, they were not at home. Clemson was right at home. Clemson was at home, and Texas was on the road and dropped more spots than Clemson did. I know that they were number one, but, you know, I just felt like it was too punitive. Look, I'm not saying they didn't deserve to drop. I mean, I know that that's the way the system works, but I think you're not going to see a downgrade in the market on Texas, right? Like, nobody, I don't think, is coming away from that game that's betting for a living or betting just to try to make money and is saying, man, I'm dropping Texas in my power ratings. Like, they understand, anybody watching understands how close that game was and how it could have easily gone the other way.
Look, I think the AP poll stinks anyway, and I'm glad that we don't really use it anymore as it is. My overreaction that I couldn't stand is the Florida State. How does Florida State jump like 30 spots? Like, they were not ranked, and the only reason why you move them, I mean, you move them ahead of all these teams in the bottom half of the top 25 that won, that all won convincingly, you know, for the most part. You leapfrog Florida State only because you couldn't possibly have been wrong about Alabama, when everybody knows that Alabama hasn't been Alabama for a couple of years now. And they're not ever going to be Alabama again, because Alabama wasn't even Alabama. Alabama was some freak show for 20 years that doesn't exist. And they'll never be that again. So they were wrong about Alabama. And now, in order to prove they were still kind of right, they had to move Florida State ahead of about 20 teams that they had behind them. So that was my big one of the week, man. That was,
well, because I would just jump in here, Chris, and I'd say, because now we're getting like the real sense from the voters of what Alabama really is, which is, you know, I don't even think they're a top 25 team, but they're fine. They're 21. So you beat a 21 ranked team. Like, we're talking about what they truly are, a fringe top 25 team at home. And yeah, you did it convincingly, whatever, I guess, but you just beat a fringe team at home and you jump that much. I mean, it's kind of like you're trying to tell me two different stories here. Yeah. Clearly, Alabama is not even close to what I had them 3. I had them three in the country, and I just could not have been more wrong about that. I don't think they're a top 25 team based on what we saw.
Yeah, that is the team I have turned around the most on, I think, in the last few, in the last week. And obviously everyone else has dropped 13 spots in the poll. The entire country has. The entire country is now out on Alabama, even those of us that thought highly of them, that thought they could compete for an SEC title and maybe more. And now the question has to be, how much longer is Kalen DeBoer there, Choppy? Like, I mean, the way Alabama's schedule sets up, there's a real chance, and I'm not trying to make Vandy more than they are, but look, they got themselves a quarterback this year, a fairly confident one. And if you look at Alabama's schedule, the way it lines up, if they're probably losing on the road at Georgia. Now, nobody's going to get fired for going to Athens and losing. That's just everybody does that.
Yeah.
But let's say they hit a bump in a row, speed bump against Wisconsin next week, and they've got three losses, coming back home. Given the way Alabama played against Florida State last week, it wouldn't be a shock at all to see Vandy go into Tuscaloosa and win. It would be surprising, right, because it's Vandy winning at Alabama. But that would be the one that I think would get the axe dropped right on Kalen DeBoer's neck.
Look, I know two things to be what I believe to be true. One, Kalen DeBoer is a really good football coach, probably a really good dude. Two, he could not be a worse fit for Alabama and the SEC. You have to be the neighbor that nobody really trusts. That's who the head coach of an SEC program is. The kind of sleazy neighbor, the HOA is always up their butt. Nobody really trusts them around their wife. That's an SEC football coach.
Lane Kiffin, right? Is what you're saying. You just painted a picture of Lane Kiffin.
I did want to say his name. Okay, I didn't want to say
I'll do it.
That's just
I'll
be to the describe guy. Literally every attribute about him.
Right.
Without
That's who has to be – like, that's who coaches in the SEC. DeBoer is – that's just – he's not – he's a good coach. It's not a slight against him. I mean, look, Shaka Smart's a good basketball coach. He didn't work at Texas. It happens, right? There's nothing wrong with that. It's not a knock on him. Who wants to follow Nick Saban anyway? You know, like, that's the other thing. So, yeah, I think that this is this could be – he might not make it to December. He might not make it to December 1st.
What do we think about the ACC now? Because Miami looked really good at times against Notre Dame. They've clearly got the receivers to bail Carson Beck out, even when he makes a terrible decision. And we already know Clemson is going to be there because you look at the rest of their schedule, and it doesn't matter that they lost to LSU. And all of a sudden, Florida State has re-entered the chat too, John. And the ACC goes from Clemson and everybody else to, wait, Clemson, Miami, Florida State. SMU didn't lose, obviously. Georgia Tech had a decent win out on the road against Colorado. And now we're talking, roll Louisville into it. We got a six-team race.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were the big winners this weekend, to be honest, the ACC. I mean, they're having a bit of a revival here just before the inevitable bust-up, right, which is coming. Yeah, other than North Carolina, which was an absolute abject disaster.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I came away thinking like, damn, maybe the ACC kind of has something cooking in, you know, this year in football. I mean, Clemson, that game could have obviously gone either way. Miami had one of the more impressive performances of the weekend. You know, SMU's kind of proven itself to be a real contender for the playoff every year. Florida State off the mat. You know, Duke's got a big one coming up this weekend against Illinois. So I thought the ACC were probably the big winners of the weekend. You know, because I think even a team like Duke is going to be heard from. So, yeah, I thought if you're, you know, one of those people that wrote the ACC off as dead, I thought that was a Undertaker hand out of the cemetery moment for that conference.
Sitting up in the casket.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, the ACC, we saw this with the Big Ten. The Big Ten's got a pretty wealthy alumni base for these programs, and I think the ACC does for a lot of these programs as well. And that helps when it comes to NIL. It means they're going to have some NIL dollars. And they're also in, you know, states that have large corporations. Like, you know, it helps to be in Florida if you're in NIL. It helps to be in Texas for NIL purposes, right? You got a lot of money in those places. So that's a big part of it. Also, I mean, those are some traditional powers. Like Miami and Florida State are traditional powers. Georgia Tech had their moments. Clemson obviously has had a really, really good run. So, yeah, it's like they were a massive winner They came to play. They had some, obviously they had some home games that were cooked in there. You know, Florida State at home, Miami at home, Clemson almost pulled one out at home, and that helps. We saw, and I think we saw this in the playoff last year, home field advantage, what it means. Home field advantage is the big winner this weekend too.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know if the ACC will stay this wide open at the top, or if Clemson, again, due to their schedule, will start to pull away. But if you didn't get Florida State at 25-1, maybe you're interested at 12-1 still. That's what it dropped down to. If you think there's an opening for someone else, Miami's down to 375 now at BetMGM to win the ACC. If you believe in Carson Beck, I still got to see a little bit more and see his receivers have to bail him out a little bit less, but the ACC would seem to be wide open. One other team I wanted to mention, because when we talked Big 12 coming into the season, it felt like there were, what, half a dozen teams maybe that were a part of the conversation. We mentioned the Colorado loss. I don't think they were originally in the conversation in the conference to begin with, but Utah had a nice win, pretty dominant win over UCLA, and they got themselves a quarterback. After the decades-long odyssey, at least that's what it felt like, John, with Cam Rising, they have got themselves a quarterback. And Devin Dampier, I think he only had 3 incompletions on the night. Utah looked really good. They're a little less than 5-1 right now, 450 at BetMGM to win the Big 12. I understand Texas Tech spent all that oil money. I understand Arizona State is still really good and has themselves a quarterback. TCU looked good on Monday night, considered the opposition, I guess. So maybe it's still a 4-5 team race in the Big 12, but it's hard not to look at Utah and say, this is what we've been waiting for 6 years, for them to have a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, they just had to finally, like, get a guy that they could, like, trust would play, right? I mean, yes. We don't have to sweat those injury reports every single week from Kyle Whittingham. I think Utah looked great. I will say, I think that game was more about the like poverty that UCLA football is in, mm-hmm. And Deshaun Foster and how, you know, and Nico Iamaleava, what a mistake he made doing this whole, pulling this whole late minute, you know, whatever it was he did, hostage situation. I don't want to be a victim of the moment. I would say it feels like we've kind of forgotten about Iowa State. They played 2 yep. weeks ago and it kind of feels like we've forgotten about how good that win was. It was striking to watch how easy it was for TCU to move the football, though. I mean, however you wanted it, whether it was through the air, whether it was on the ground, obviously that defense came up with tons of turnovers and stops. So, you know, I think TCU 6-1, Iowa State 8-1. I think those feel like good bets right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we're forgetting about TCU. Everybody's forgetting about Iowa State, but that's because it was 2 weeks ago. But man, I mean, you know, Texas Tech is still. I mean, they got the transfer portal of all transfer portals, and they got all the money. The Marauder Club or the Matador Club, whatever they call it, whatever their collective is called, they got a lot of cash. But you have to. This is wide open, completely wide open. I don't think anybody mentioned Arizona State really, and they've been. I mean, they're the highest ranked of the bunch. So I think, you know, the national folk might have them. But, I mean, Iowa State is always there, and they're well-coached. TCU is well-coached as well, obviously with, you know, Dykes. But I would think one of those two, TCU or Texas Tech right now, outside of Utah.
Yeah, there's a lot of offensive talent in that conference. And there's going to be a lot of points scored on a week-to-week basis. So the Big 12, definitely wide open. But a couple of teams that maybe made us stand up and notice just a little bit more in week one. John alluded to this, Choppy, so I got to ask you, with Iamaleava out, looks like your Vols may have found themselves a quarterback real quick.
Look, this is the formula now that I think all programs should take. Get a veteran quarterback. Forget about recruiting one. Forget about spending millions of dollars in recruitment of a quarterback. Every year, go out there and find a Riley Leonard, find a John Mateer, find a Joey Aguilar, find a Carson Beck, find one of those, Dylan Gabriel. Just keep recycling that, and I think you'll be fine. I think that's what teams are starting to figure out, because if you notice, like, you know, who didn't have a problem going and playing week one? You know, it was, you know, Carson Beck didn't have a problem with it. Garrett Nussmeier didn't have a problem with it. Joey Aguilar didn't have a problem with it. You know, but who did? You had some of these kids. Arch Manning, first start. Julian Saint, first start. Ty Simpson, first start. Like, they had problems. Carr.
Yeah.
Carr had a problem, too. So I think the vets is where it's at.
We mentioned Iowa State. We mentioned Duke. We mentioned a couple big games that we want to dig into here. We'll do that next, starting with the one between the Wolverines and the Sooners, SEC Big Ten, next here on BetMGMU. Make sure you're downloading the show in podcast form so you can take it with you wherever you're going, maybe on the way to the tailgate on a Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon. BetMGMU. Alongside RJ Choppy and John Martin, I'm Chris Mack. I told you we got a few games we want to dig into here. John had brought up Illinois and Duke earlier. We'll get to that in just a couple minutes. The Cy-Hawk rivalry, Iowa-Iowa State. We'll see if Iowa can somehow score 30 points, only throwing the ball for like 50 yards again. We'll get into all that, but let's start with what is probably the big one of the weekend, right? Saturday night on ABC, number 15, Michigan Wolverines against the number 18, Oklahoma Sooners. Only the second ever meeting between these two programs. First one was all the way back in the 1976 Orange Bowl. You got Bryce Underwood, who's taken over the quarterback position, Choppy, for Michigan. Looked decent in his debut last week against New Mexico. They didn't cover. It was a 34.5-point spread. They won by 17, but he threw for 250. John Mateer, on the other hand, you mentioned experienced quarterbacks and making sure you have one. Oklahoma went out and got themselves one. Looked really good. 30 of 37, 392, and three scores, granted, over Illinois State, but take it for what it's worth, a good start for Oklahoma. And they're laying 5.5 at home against the Wolverines on Saturday.
Man, I really like the Sooners here. You know, I know that that, you know, Bryce is a super talented player, but I think you're going to see a very similar thing with what you saw with Arch this week, and that's a player going into a road environment who's never played in a road environment, and that's going to be a problem. That is, it's just going to be a problem. And it's nothing against him. If this game was in Michigan, I think all those problems would be alleviated, but it's not. I don't think you can simulate how difficult it is to play a road game in college football. We have seen it. It's been more apparent over the last, you know, basically last 3 weeks of college football that we've had, if you count the playoff from last year, how difficult it is. And then you add, you know, kids, 18-year-old kids who are playing in front of 8,000 people this time last year and now are playing in front of 88,000 people. It's tough. I could easily make the case the jump from high school to college, Division I, major Division I, is bigger than it is from major Division I to the pros for that reason, because you're already used to playing in front of big crowds. If you play at Georgia, playing against the Packers is no big deal, right? You've already played in front of that crowd. But you've not played in front of this one. And that, I think, is why Oklahoma, that is the difference in this game. The Sooners win, and they cover.
John, are we overreacting a little bit? I know a lot of us came in high on the Sooners, especially because of Mateer. And again, it was against Illinois State. But they are the home team here, and I think Choppy makes a point about a young quarterback on the road.
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point there will be some interest in Michigan. I think you already have seen a little bit of it. You know, late in the week, you know, because it gets to a point where if it opens at one and then it just keeps getting out, you know, two, three, four, we're crossing a lot of key numbers here, boys. So I think there will be, you know, at some point some interest in Michigan. But yeah, I mean, I think it's fine laying. I mean, I would not really get involved with Oklahoma now, because I just know, you know, Michigan loves these ugly games. They play these ugly games and they just find ways to stay in them. But I think if this gets back towards Oklahoma and we can maybe, I don't know that it will cross four again, but if for whatever reason it did, I could see, you know, Oklahoma, you know, again, taking some money. But I think right now with where it is at this point, 5.5, you're only going to see Wolverines money. And it makes sense with a total of 44.5, right? I mean, it just makes sense.
Yeah, I like Oklahoma a lot in this one as well. They're down to plus 350 to make the playoff, down from, I want to say, 525, 550 preseason. So that number continues to come down. If you think they can sneak in as the fourth team in the SEC, if you think Bama's dropping out of that picture, obviously, after just 1 week, Their number has actually gone to the plus side to make the playoff. So maybe Oklahoma is that third or fourth team from the SEC to sneak into the playoff if you're looking at futures on the Sooners. But, yeah, 5.5, I really like that number, and I just don't see Michigan generating the offense, especially on the road with a freshman quarterback against the Sooners. Also a noon Eastern kick, Iowa State, Iowa. We talked about the Cyclones a couple minutes ago, an impressive opening victory for them. And they've won 4 of the last 6 meetings of the Cy-Hawk rivalry. Iowa has. Iowa State, though, has won 2 of the last 3. Iowa State last week, 65 points against South Dakota. Rocco Beck, 19 of 20 for 278 and 3 touchdowns. And I mentioned Iowa, I think, threw for, I want to say it was like 50 yards. It was ridiculous. They still scored 30 points because they ran for a bunch. It was Iowa doing Iowa things. The spread's at 3.5 now. The hook makes me pause just a second because it's probably a low-scoring game if it involves the Hawkeyes. That total, though, 41.5, choppy. I mean, we're used to seeing Iowa totals, even against a team that can score some points like the Cyclones, in the 30s.
We are. But, I like the under in this one. I would probably lean towards the under. I actually think Iowa State could cover, which I know is probably not the greatest thing for an under to play there. I just don't trust Iowa to score. They just – it doesn't matter what year it is. I don't even think it matters who the coach is. They just play games to make it look bad. They're trying to recreate Field of Dreams. I'm convinced of that. They're just trying to recreate it, a different sport, you know, bunting and everything. Whatever the football version of the bunt is, and the sack fly. That's what Iowa is from a football perspective. Give me the under. And give me Iowa State -3.5.
John,
just the prototype of game that I hate betting. rivalry game. Don't really know all that much about either. And I'm having to lay a hook here.
Yeah,
I think generally speaking, I mean, profitably, you can bet the under and forget it. And that's probably what I would do. I wouldn't think this through too much. It's an Iowa State game. It's 41.5. I'll bet the over. And if they get me, they get me, man. But I couldn't bet over on this one.
Yeah, the only path to the over is, I mean, I guess I could see Iowa State opening it up late if they have a lead,
right,
and maybe they hang 30 and Iowa's able to scratch and fight and claw their way to, you know, 14 points and we're beating ourselves up at the end of the night. But I tend to lean with you guys that the under is always the way to go with Iowa. If not for the hook, I liked it when it was at 3 with Iowa State, but with the 3.5, I think I do, just because of the low-scoring nature of these games. I'm going to stay away from it. Illinois and Duke, another noon Eastern kick on Saturday. The highest the Illini have been ranked in the AP Top 25 since they were number 10 in 2001. Duke, are they a part of this ACC conversation? John, you brought them up a couple minutes ago, but Illinois laying 3 on the road at Duke. I think Illinois is a dark horse Big Ten playoff candidate, but this is one of those games they've got to win to show me that they're more than just a dark horse, that they're legit. This seems like it would be a prime stumbling block for the Bielema teams of the last couple years.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, Duke is a really interesting team because they paid this Mensa kid so much money. I mean, I think every time this kid's numbers come up, it's like they get more outrageous. Like, it's just insane. And you know, I thought he looked pretty good last week against Elon, but it's Elon, so you know, I don't want to really take too much out of it. But look, man, I don't know how you pass up getting 3 here at home with that kid's talent. You know, I realize that Illinois is, you know, super loaded and they're in for their best year in a long time. But, you know, I just think Duke's coach and this kid from Tulane, I think they're going to have enough to give Illinois, and that they had a chance to win this outright. So especially at 0-5, I would definitely be on the home dog here.
Man, I'll tell you, I just don't get Illinois. I don't know what I'm missing with them. I just can't buy it. It's like Indiana last year. I just couldn't buy it. And I know that, you know, and I know Illinois kind of, you could see the natural progression. I think skewed by Bielema at Arkansas. But maybe that's a DeBoer thing. It just didn't work. Right. Nothing against him. Yeah. He's a good coach. Wisconsin just didn't work. I don't know what to make of Illinois. When Duke spends that kind of money on a quarterback, I think I would expect more things than what you saw in week one. So I'm probably going to stay away. I think John's right, though. I mean, that's a low number. If you're looking for the number 11 team, that is not a tough place to play.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's go down your way for one here, Choppy. Baylor at SMU. Also a noon Eastern, 11 Central kick. SMU is only laying 2.5. Now, my initial knee-jerk reaction is, oh, yeah, give me SMU laying less than a field goal. But I wonder how much of that ugly loss to the week one loss for Baylor to Auburn, how much of that was a mirage? The defense didn't look great, obviously, but they rolled up nearly 500 yards on offense, Choppy. So The things that are supposed to go well for Baylor still went well in spots. No turnovers. They got out uglied against Auburn. Yeah. So I don't know. This is a weird one for me because the initial knee jerk reaction is give me SMU, especially if it's less than a field goal. But I think Baylor bounces back this week.
Look, I'm in a similar boat because when you're kind of close enough to these programs, you kind of know their warts, you know, their good things. I was a little surprised that it was only 2.5. But I don't know that, like, I think SMU was kind of due for, you know, not a down year, but a lesser year than they had last season. I mean, how could you not be? You went to the playoff. You weren't expected to go to the playoff. And, you know, Baylor is a team that's fighting for their coach. A lot of this is what actually is Auburn? You know, what do you make of Auburn? What do people make of Auburn? Are they – I mean, I saw some of these – the amount of people that have them, like if the season ended today, they're a playoff team. What are we doing here? You know, I think we might be overreacting a little bit to them. But what is Auburn? Is Auburn a top 15, top 10 team? If they are, that actually does seem pretty beneficial to Baylor's offense and what they were able to do, what Sawyer was able to do, you know, slinging that football around. But you know, on the surface, I'm like 2.5 is too little. I would take SMU at 2.5, but something about that number scares me.
Yeah, SMU is another team that, like you said, you come into the season thinking, okay, it can't go as well as it did last year. They're going to have to come back down to earth, and this would be a prime year for it. But just at home against Baylor, and I understand, like you said, a lot of people are coming in high on Baylor this year. I don't know. This is a tough one for me to read. The total 63.5, though. It's down from 65.5 earlier in the week. I mean, I don't like to go over something in the 60s, but we might get a good bit of offense in this one.
Definitely going to get a good bit of offense. There's no doubt about that. Like, this is going to be one of those, you know, shoot 'em up type games. You are going to get a ton of offense. And, you know, look, I mean, and a lot of this is, you know, the trenches, you know, who wins the battle between the trenches. That happens in every level of football. But the quarterback play for both these teams is pretty good. So I expect some points.
One more quick peek at a game because we slandered Lane Kiffin earlier. We should probably bring his team up. Number 20, Ole Miss at Kentucky. Laying 10, Kentucky's bad, Choppy. I mean, yes. Real bad. So I don't know if 10 is enough here. I don't know if Ole Miss is a borderline playoff team again this year like they were a year ago. I tend to say no. I think they're probably a borderline top 25 team, and that's where they're ranked right now, 20th. I think that's more like it, but Kentucky's bad. I think I'd be fine laying in down to 9.5 at BetMGM right now. I'd be fine laying less than double digits.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kentucky is they're unwatchable right now. They're unwatchable. I'm convinced that they're just not trying to play football, modern football. You know, I don't know what they're trying to do, but it's not play modern football. And look, Lane Kiffin has shown to be somewhat of a quarterback whisperer. And I certainly don't want to offend any Ole Miss fans. I drew the ire of Ole Miss fans on social media because I dared to say that they might not have the same NIL money as Texas. I dared to say that. But yeah, who knows, right? But it's college football, man. It just means more. It just means more.
Well, we'll see how it goes for Ole Miss. I mean, again, they've lost Jackson Dart, four of their five starting offensive linemen coming into this year, and most of their experience on the D-line. But I don't think this is a spot where the tumble starts on the road at Kentucky. When we come back, we're going to take a look at some of those early adjustments to the Heisman numbers after week one. Get you our best bets as well, all on the way here on BetMGMU. Get you some of our best bets before we wrap up here in a few moments on BetMGMU alongside John Martin and RJ Choppy. I'm Chris Mack, live coast to coast on the BetMGM network every Friday night and Saturday morning, always available in podcast form wherever you get your podcasts, especially right there inside that Odyssey app. And of course, on YouTube, just search for the BetMGM network. You can watch the show there as well. Let's first take a peek at some updated Heisman numbers. We're a week barely into the season, but very quickly, some of these numbers adjusted. Arch Manning obviously was the favorite coming into week one, John, at 6-1. He drops all the way to 16-1. We've got John Mateer climbing up the board to the same number. You got Cade Klubnik dropping from 9-1 to 14-1 at BetMGM. You still got Garrett Nussmeier up there right around 8-9-1, depending on where you find it. Probably one of the biggest jumps, though, Lenore Sellers from 14-1 to 9-1. We were talking about this, Zach and I, just a little bit during the break, and Sellers has a potential now just from 1 week. It seems like he's absolutely put his draft stock on a rocket, and it's taken off into the stratosphere. But can he keep this up the rest of the season, especially once he starts to go against SEC defenses?
Oh, that was for, I thought that was for RJ. Oh,
that was for you.
Oh, well, look at us.
I'll fake it, baby. Let's go. Yeah,
we're both trying to finish the lob here. There's no question about that. But yeah, listen, I think Mateer is definitely a guy that has already shown, you know, at multiple different spots that, you know, he can do the job. I mean, at Washington State, and granted, just a steroid-infused offense, but he's sort of bringing that over, to Oklahoma. So I think he's going to be in the mix, you know, that dual threat, obviously, every single week. Nussmeier, that offense, I mean, there will be, you know, better weeks for him, I think, from a number standpoint. We know that's going to be, you know, the objective there is to throw the ball and keep it in the air. I mean, I think Lenore Sellers is the guy that has the runway, though, just because he's going to have – multiple paths to score a touchdown every single week, you know, run touchdown, the passing touchdown. Like, it just feels like they're going to run stuff for him in the red zone. I think, you know, I mean, it's basically a dead heat here between Nussmeier and Sellers at this point. But I do think, you know, Sellers is a guy that's going to be there in the end. I think he's probably in my view, I would probably make him the favorite just because of, you know, how much the offense is going to depend on him. But yeah, I think there's still definitely some value here at second in the market, 9-1. Feels like a good bet to me.
There's definitely value there. You know, Mateer is a guy that's probably going to have a really good opportunity to win this thing. They're going to be a good team. They got a good defense, and now they got a quarterback. And that's what they didn't have last year. They were a tough watch at Oklahoma. Oklahoma was a tough team to watch last year. And now they've got themselves a quarterback, and I think that's going to be really, really big, and they could be a team that finds themselves in the playoff. I think if you're going to look at Sellers versus Mateer, I think a lot of it's going to come down to maybe who gets in the postseason. I think Nussmeier is going to be in New York. I think he's going to be there. Whether or not they give it to him, you know, who knows? But, like, I think right now, like, if you were looking at it, like, you would say, all right, Sellers probably might be the favorite for the Heisman, but Nussmeier might be the favorite for the number one pick.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. I definitely think that October 11th game in Baton Rouge could go a long way to deciding that when they play each other, the Gamecocks and the Tigers down at LSU. I told someone this the other night after LSU's win over Clemson. I said, look at the rest of that schedule. Tell me now, especially after seeing the way Alabama played week one, where the hiccups are on that schedule. I know I mentioned South Carolina coming in. And yes, they do get Florida next week, depending on how much we believe in DJ Lagway and the Gators. And yeah, they get A&M, but that's also at home. Late in the year, they do have to wrap up at Norman against the Sooners. But there's just not a lot of spots on this schedule, John, where I go, oh, that's a blow-up game. All of a sudden, once they got through that opening game and Brian Kelly got over the opening jinx, LSU all of a sudden stacks up real nice, not just for a playoff, but a deep run into the playoff. And Nussmeier, if he's the quarterback on the best team, I think like Choppy said, he's not only in New York, he's definitely got the inside lane right now for good reason.
No doubt. And I think, you know, the SEC by and large this year is kind of down. I mean, I just don't know, you know, how many truly great teams are in it. I mean, how many playoff teams do we really think there are in the SEC? Like Ole Miss, I don't know. I doubt it. Florida, I doubt it. South Carolina, we'll see. I wasn't really super convinced by them in that game against Virginia Tech. They broke it open because of special teams and things like that. But Alabama, no. A&M, no. I mean, they really did a you know, service to LSU by, you know, they don't have to play Texas until, you know, what would be, I guess, the SEC championship game in this scenario. So, or Georgia, whoever it is. They don't play Georgia either. So, yeah, I mean, I think they definitely have the setup here. I mean, the best team they play the rest of the way, I guess you would say, is South Carolina. But that game's at home, and I think a competent quarterback is going to be able to move the ball. So, I mean, I do. I think LSU is going to be in the picture, and if that is the case, then yes, Nussmeier is going to be – and that's why he's the favorite, right? He's the favorite because in large part due to that schedule.
I also think Choppy – go ahead.
This is a strange year for the conference. I think there's legitimate 8 playoff teams that could make a case to be in the playoff. I don't think there's any elite teams, though. I don't think they have a true title contender. But I think 8 teams – and I don't think Alabama's one of the 8. But I think there are 8, maybe 9, depending on what you think about Auburn. There are 8 or 9 teams that could look there and say, hey, we have a legitimate chance to make the playoff. Make the playoff, not win it, but make it. You know, like I could see LSU make it, obviously Georgia. I could see Texas make it, A&M, Ole Miss, Florida, Auburn, South Carolina.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's say 8 or 9 teams I legitimately could see making this playoff. But again, I don't think any of them can win it. I guess maybe Georgia could win the whole thing. You know, they got a loaded team. I just don't know that I trust Gunnar Stockton.
Yeah, that's a fair one. And I will say this about Sellers specifically and South Carolina. You know, you look down – again, I don't want to make too much of the schedule because we overbake the schedule in the offseason and especially in the early weeks of the season. But they have got murderer's row in October, man. Like, they got a bye week to open the month, and then it's a trip I mentioned already to Baton Rouge. Then it's Oklahoma, granted at home. And then it's Alabama. We'll see what the Tide look like at that point. And then they wrap up with games against Texas A&M and Clemson sandwiched around Coastal Carolina. The back half of their schedule is brutal. So if I'm betting Sellers, I'm probably waiting. I mean, the number is going to get shorter between now and then, but it might come back out. And I think if you believe in South Carolina, you want to get to October. You really do. Assuming they don't trip up against Vandy or Missouri, I think they're going to look good going into October. You're just going to find out a whole lot about them, John, in that month of October, South Carolina.
Yeah, and you know, I do think Beamer's done a really good job there. But I know they felt like they had a qualm about, you know, not making the playoff last year. But, I think now we're at a point with them where, you know, it's high leverage and it's not just a free swing for him anymore. And I'm just not really convinced. Like, you just kind of have to do it. Again, that's not the easiest job in the world there. But you got to go out there and you got to do it. And, he's got the tools. He's got the tools with Lenore Sellers at the helm. So, yeah, October will be a big month. And, you know, if they can do it, then, you know, I think all bets are off for them this year.
Look, I hope they lose every game. They cheated and beat us and knocked us out of the 2022 Final Four, so I hope they lose every game.
At least you're not taking it personal.
At least I've forgotten about it. I'm over it, clearly.
Right.
Me and Hendon Hooker and Joe Milton don't talk about that at all.
No, not at all. No matter where the action is, there's nothing like getting in the game with college football and leveling up your next parlay. You can use a parlay boost token in your BetMGM app to boost your potential payout from any winning college football parlay. I'll throw one out there. We already talked about the under in Iowa-Iowa State at 42.5. We already talked about Ole Miss. If they're laying less than 10, less than double digits at Kentucky, Kentucky's a disaster. Ole Miss may not be the borderline playoff team they were a year ago, but still, I'll take that one. And then Texas Tech against Kent State. I think they're favored by 48, and the total is 59.5. All I'm asking for is just a couple field goals from Kent State, because I think the Red Raiders do the rest on their own. But that would be my parlay if I was looking to use that parlay boost token. John, do you have one?
Yes, I do. It's going to be a lot of fun. Is everybody ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are all games that nobody wants to watch, okay? That's my specialty.
Even better.
Yeah, UTSA Moneyline against Texas State. This is the battle for Choppy. All right?
Yeah. That's a revenge game from last year.
It is. That's right. Mississippi State +6.5 at home against Arizona State. Duke +3 at home against Illinois. And then Memphis, final leg, Memphis under the number in the game. It's going to vary, but I think 57, 58 is around what that's at.
Wow. Okay.
So that's a four-legger for you. That's a dog. That's a dog parlay. Dog. Four legs.
Yeah,
unless,
baby.
Unless it's a dog with three legs, in which case, you know, it's not a four-legger anymore.
I am going to break all my rules. I never bet favorites. I'm doing a four-team favorite parlay. OU -5.5, SMU -2.5, Ole Miss -9.5, and K-State -17 against Army. Army just lost to Tarleton State, who's an FCS team. They lost at home. Lost at home.
Yeah, that was brutal.
That was a bad loss. Bad loss.
I'm going to try and predict which one of the four legs breaks your heart, and I'm going to go with SMU. Yeah. I think SMU breaks it up for you. I think that's the one that when we get together again, you're going to go, oh, damn it, why did I put that in there?
That's going to happen. I know it. It's going to happen. But I'm going to ride with John's. I'm going to use John's too. I would have used yours, but I didn't write it down.
It's the dog parlay because it's got four legs.
So use that parlay.
I really got Choppy over there going, man.
There we go. Let's do it. That's a real hoop for Choppy.
Use that parlay boost token inside your BetMGM app and get on out there and make it a weekend. Thanks for joining us. We'll do it again next week. And we'll see who wildly disappoints us in week two, or if everything goes exactly as we expect it to. I'm guessing it probably won't. For our producer, Zach Krall, for John Martin, for RJ Choppy, I'm Chris Mack. This has been BetMGMU.